Welcome one, welcome all, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 108, for real this time. This one is entitled, Always Pass On What You Have Learned. Howdy everybody, Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of a store called The Portal, located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. We are also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. I am your host, The Brant, and with me for this episode is...
Your co-host, Brian.
And your guest host, Larry Plano.
Nice, and we are here live at The Portal... On the day before Thanksgiving, I kind of the day before craziness, or 2 days before.
Yeah.
The Christmas shopping season is upon us. How's everything going with that, Brian?
Yeah, it's going well. It is before we're open, just so the sound of the crickets. It's not
right. Yeah, nobody.
Yeah, in the middle of the hustle, but we're getting in a lot of product. You know, I carried in a bunch of boxes right before we started this up, so we're getting there, gearing up, and. It's coming really quickly. So
and trains, right? Is this when the season starts, where the trains run?
Yeah, they're running every Sunday at Time Machine from 1 to 4. So there are three great clubs that come out, and they run each different scale, and it's a good thing to see. And, you know, we have events going while the trains are running as well. So it's kind of – we're focusing on those – like Sundays to be like the event activity sort of day for people to come out. So, cool. Yeah, it should be good.
And we glossed right over our guest host. How are you, Larry?
I'm wonderful.
Excellent.
I'm looking forward to the Thanksgiving holiday.
Yeah, both being people that work in schools, this is like the first big chance to just like take a breath and back away, right?
Yes.
Nice. Awesome. This episode's going to be Keyforge. We figured it was big enough to dedicate a whole episode to, so that's what we're going to do. I just remembered upcoming events. Larry, we are going to PAX Unplugged.
Yes, we are.
So
that is pretty soon, too.
It's right? The weekend after this.
Oh, wow. I better start getting ready.
Yeah, it's been awesome, too. I have, Kathy and I have media badges. Brian, I don't think you're going to make out. And this is awesome because I said my goal for 2019 was like a lot more contact with publishers and getting to the point where they're kind of reaching out to me. And I have had 20 people contact me for interviews and other things at PAX Unplugged. So that's just exciting. Like, not a bragging thing, just to like, okay, this is how we move forward. Because if it's always on me to contact everybody at the same time, you know, but it's neat. So that's definitely been a good there. And I'll even give props to PAX because I think they kind of initiate that, right? They create these badges and then this avenue for them to be able to contact you.
Well, they've supposedly grown a lot from last year to this year.
Yeah, the hall is going to be that whole space we played in last year.
That's impressive.
And what they had. So
the numbers, they're talking how many thousands?
They're hoping to be 50,000.
Wow.
Which is almost Gen Con.
Yeah, they're approaching Gen
Con. Probably the first year we went to Gen Con was 55,000. So.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be huge. And all the RPG section is all moving, like the whole downstairs is going to be RPG. So the rooms they had will be opened up for gaming. So we'll see. I don't know. Maybe it'll end up being at about 40,000 because I'm pretty sure badges are still available, which means they haven't sold out at that point. It's a tricky time, too, and there is snow pending in New England, of course, as everybody predicted last year, which I never thought it would be this cold and capable of snowing this early like this, but yeah, no doubter. So, are you running the race tomorrow?
I'm planning on it, yeah. So it'll be a little
zero.
Chilly.
And I have my traditional football game in the morning.
Oh,
I'll
nice.
Be playing flag football. We're all dressing incredibly warm tomorrow.
Yeah, so. It's going to be cold around here. So coldest Thanksgiving ever, they're saying. So that'll be fun. Cool. Yeah, but Kathy and I will be at PAX Unplugged at booth 2840, which is the Dice Tower booth. We'll be working there as well as floating around taking meetings. Kathy has scheduled herself for her own meetings.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Because they emailed her, and she scheduled her own meetings, and there was things she was interested in. Awesome. So she loves that. If she can be organized like that, then she knows what she's doing. Because the wandering is no good for her. Wandering and talking to people with me, not her thing. Larry will just be wandering.
I'm going to be wandering.
He's going to be playing games.
Not probably good for my wallet, but that's okay.
There you go.
I will be wandering.
Cool. Let's talk about what's on our table. What have you guys been playing? We're not going to review anything here, but... Just mention what we've
Well,
been
shockingly, Keyforge.
Yeah,
I've played Keyforge. I've played Estates a lot. I like it. People I've played have liked it, so check states out. Fireball Island I've gotten to, and I've been playing a lot of Dwarf's Fall. So those have been the games I've been focused on of late.
Nice, cool. Yeah, I'm hoping to get hands on Fireball Island somewhere here soon. So,
And Keyforge for me. Keyforge. Then some like Fat Brain toy games, like those came in. So I played Swipe Shot with my son. What was the other one? Sorry, I just got a call. Peek-a-Doodle-Doo. That was another solid one. So that's a memory game. It was really cool. And then Pulsar 2849. So.
Oh, who'd you play that with?
Ben.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a great game. Somebody just had that in the Dice Tower Facebook feed, and I was like, this is one of the best games of 2017. I remember sitting down to play that at PAX last year, and you and I knew in one round this was a great game. It was good. Nice. I had a game night the other night, and I played four great games. I played Keyforge. I played Heroes of Terranoth. I played Wildlands, and I played Gingerbread House, and all four were hits. Wildland was the surprise hit to me. I thought it would be good, and it's obviously Martin Wallace, but it was great. Like, and from reading it and trying it myself, it wasn't nearly as good, but playing it, I really enjoyed. And then the other one I'll tack on I didn't play that night that I've been playing lately is Thunderstone Quest. So these are some of the games that we'll be talking about coming up, and with all the ins and outs of schedules, who knows who it'll be on the podcast when, so there may be a lot of me. I'm hoping Kathy and I will do our episode. You won't be with me in the car to do the episode home, so we'll have to find some time for that there. All right, I think it's Keyforge time. Right. So if people don't know, Keyforge is a new game that came out from Fantasy Flight Games. It's a dueling mages, I guess they're not mages, but card game. And you get your own deck, the twist here being the unique deck. So every deck is uniquely made, and that's what you have to play with. And it's from Richard Garfield. Did I say that already?
And uniquely, instead of dueling mages, I actually read the backstory, because I'm so interested in this game, and I'm hoping they actually create a novel. The backstory is very, it reminds me of an old Marvel book series where all races, right, get trapped on this other world, this Keyforge, right? Like this unique planet of all these different, and then you are gaining your group and you're getting three factions, as we know, and then you're trying to unlock and, you know, survive this planet that you've been sort of teleported to by some omnipresent. So it's an interesting, it's in the starter, the little backstory. So it's pretty neat. It was written well. I'm curious to see if they carry that along. So we'll see.
So we had a pre-release event at the store, and Brian, you oversaw that, but Larry, you were helping a bunch with that. So why don't you tell us about the pre-release event first?
Yeah, so it was the Saturday before. We kind of announced this open sort of play for that whole day. You know, so we received a bit, like I think it was like three cases of product plus three starters. We just kind of had people come in, buy a deck, like pay $10. They kind of sat down, played a bunch of games, and you know, every person that they played with, they got a raffle ticket for that, and every win that they got a raffle ticket as well. And we kind of did that play through, and then at the end of it, we just raffled off the like two of the starter sets, so we could have one here to demo for people to play with. And there were, you know, a bunch of promos that kind of came in with that, some lanyards, some pins. There you go. Thank you. And it was great to see. I mean, I think the last pre-launch sort of thing that we had done was, that was like kind of comparable, would be like the Star Wars Destiny stuff, mm-hmm. where we had a bunch of people come in and play. And it's always hit or miss with, you know, with new systems. So it was good to see a lot of people come in and really embrace the game.
It was also nice to see in that environment, everyone had just the one deck, right? So they mm-hmm. were playing one deck, and you got to see someone's deck, you know, maybe against yours, maybe it came out really well, and then you got to see them two or three games later, and maybe they had a different draw or whatever, and it played a little differently. And almost, I mean, there were some games that were a little lopsided, but even in a game I had, I think, with Brant, where it felt like I was going to get crushed 3-0, and it just, Brant had all this board control. By the end of the game, I did get 2 keys, and I did have some amber left over, even though I felt like I was never in, you know. So the game, watching it in that format, there did seem to be a lot of balance, and it's going to be curious as people buy, as many decks as I've bought to figure out, one, how to play them all to see what really is a good deck, and then, you know, how you compare it, because the game does right now seem relatively balanced from what I've seen in that pre-release anyways, because I saw I actually saw Brant's deck play Jose's deck, and Jose's deck had a very similar kind of board control mechanism when I played him, and then he didn't do as well against your deck, Brant, but your deck also didn't play as well as it did when it played me, so it was really interesting to see it kind of go through, and I want to say about half the games I saw went through the deck and reshuffled, which is interesting. I'm wondering how common, because some games after a month or two, they tend to, people get the hang of it and they tend to get quicker wins. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's going to happen with this, or if this is going to be pretty constant where you will shuffle your deck enough to know that you'll get a card back if you choose to discard it or whatever. So
my deck that I got in that tournament, I have reshuffled it every time I've played it. Yeah, I've never lost or won before reshuffling it. Mm-hmm. It definitely is intended to be. Now, it has Logos, and Logos does the go through your deck faster of all of them.
It'll be interesting to see how that develops and how the game develops, because I remember with other games, it was like the first time you played it, it's a 10-turn game, and one expansion later, people are like, oh, 2-turn wins or whatever, you know, so.
I thought the format, like I feel like you mentioned it, but it was almost like we glossed over it a little bit. I thought the format that you set up for that day was really good, because it just kept the game open. I heard a lot of other places where it was very tournament-oriented. There was something big on the line. It was like, the winner gets a whole box. Everybody else gets nothing, or they get their lanyards, whatever. But like, it was everything or nothing. And they talked about games that took an hour and 45 minutes because people were reading and thinking, right? You get in that real like tournament structure, people slow way down. And we just kept it like, it was almost like play faster, because the more people you play, the more tickets you get. Like, just learn your deck, just have fun.
And Brian had that idea of the raffles, and I liked it because it encouraged, we capped how many raffle tickets you could get, right? And we made it so you had to play with a unique person to get a raffle ticket. So I couldn't just sit down with my buddy and play 10 games and get 10 raffle tickets, right? So that was a really nice, but it encouraged, play your deck against multiple people, different people. If you win, you get a few more. But at the end of the day, I think we capped it at 10. So you could have reasonably, you know, played 7 matches, won a couple, got the 10 raffle tickets. And that way everyone had a chance at getting something. And I think it was less stressful. It was more fun. And it got people to see the game more. I'd like that format. I'd like to see it with other maybe LCGs and other stuff, you know, a similar format that, you know, I understand if a company is going to give us a really great prize or something that's, you know, store championship or something like that, you got to do a tournament format. But for something like this, for the pre-release, I really liked how you did that. That was
it went solid. Well. I do have to say Fantasy Flight did a great job of – I mean, they sent a lot of retailers demo decks ahead of time. Yeah. And I think because we had that opportunity to try it out, like if we didn't have those, I don't think we would have been prepared for the game to like answer all the questions and go through anything that people were confused on. Because there were definitely a couple things that kind of kept coming up, you know, just some confusing text or different keywords that don't really get mentioned like throughout like the cards or whatnot. So it was great that they sent us those copies ahead of time, and I think that was a huge part of what the success kind of came about from. So, I don't know. I mean, you two had played a little bit prior to it, right?
Yep.
So, yeah. So, and it just having helped. Some people out there kind of knowing the rules and guiding stuff through was great.
Yeah.
And it's intuitive. I mean, I think once, to your point, the keywords, once you know what a keyword is, it's intuitive. There's not a lot of weird circumstances in the game that I've seen in its infancy yet. You know, maybe that'll change over time, but right now it's pretty straightforward how things work. Just knowing what the keyword means.
Yeah, we had a little bit of frustration when I was playing Kathy with, like, what does it mean to attack and who's an attacker? So, like, in other games, it's very clear. If I am using my creature against your creature, I am the attacker, you are the defender. But there's really no defense. It's they both attack each other.
They're fighting,
yeah. Yeah, they're fighting, but then fight is also a term. So, like, Kathy has a creature that says before fight. But if I attack it, if I fight it, she doesn't get that ability. It's before she chooses to fight, and that's not written well on there. And even the rule book. I would have that major complaint. The rule book that comes in the starter set is like 4 pages, but the actual rule book is like 14 pages, and they didn't include that. And even that rule book doesn't do a great clarifier. Like, if you know keywords exist, it's easier. So there's skirmish and elusive. which is skirmish is you don't take damage when you attack, and elusive is you don't take damage when you are attacked.
Nothing takes damage. Right, the first when it's attacked, no damage is dealt.
Yeah. There you go. So yeah, so it's just interesting. Like, you got to parse your way through all of them, but that's what you got to do. And when you're writing it on a card, you want it to be as minimal as possible. But I agree with you. I haven't seen any that are like some of the magic blue deck cards that are like, take this card, set it aside. Now take a third of your deck, take it off the top, shuffle it, hand it to your opponent. They then draw three cards off the top of that. Look at them. Kick one, put it back on, shuffle your cards back in, take the card back in your hand, put it in your grave. Like,
well, and the key is there's no weird timing issues in Keyforge at this time.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have stuff to do on your opponent's turn, which is when you tend to get a lot of questions about, oh, but yeah, wait, I did this, okay, but now I'm going to do this, but now you, right? Like, but I will, just to comment on what you said about the rule book. It, minor frustration for me, it's becoming more of a theme, I feel, and maybe it's a Fantasy Flight thing. I feel like rule books are becoming, we're just going to give you the basic rules, and then go online and find the real rules, right? And that's tough for those of us that may not be technologically sound.
It's interesting because there's companies talking about online rule books only, so that when there's an error, they could just update it online and nobody learns the rule the wrong way.
Right, and presumably they're going to save on printing costs too.
Right. So just interesting, you know, having that be a thing. But yeah, it'd be strange to not be able to just sit down, you know, and just open the rule book. Anyway. All right, just quickly, we should talk about the deck name controversy. So, just like the decks are uniquely generated, the names are uniquely generated. And there is so much speculation as to what they put into the generator for the names and where all this came, just the names. So, you have some deck names. These are some of Larry's decks.
Yeah, and it's interesting.
And they're not inappropriate.
Right, no, not that I.
But we'll talk about some decks that came up with names that were inappropriate.
And some of the decks, now I have over 30 decks, so I've looked through, and some decks just make no sense. It's like clearly random name generation, whatever the formula is, like if certain words are at the front of a potential, and some decks have 7-word names, some decks have 3-word names.
Yep.
So, right, but some that actually sounded like they made sense and some that were interesting. I have the Orange Gatekeeper of Red Town. Pretty basic, right? But then I have the Plucking Tidebreaker of Menagerie. I have Lay, so now they went to somewhat of a like a foreign, you know, thing here. Lay Dulcet, the Ruffian of Icontown. I have the Man That Stops the Noise, very basic. And the one that I think I like the best, the Devil That Abysmally Collects Eternity. So
he's terrible at it.
Right? Like, so, but there are some, I've seen some with some, you know, very straightforward 2-3-word names. It's just, I hope someday they release a portion of the formula. Just, I'm curious to see how they did that, right? Because if you play a video game, or I remember the old Wizard 101 game, you couldn't make your own name in the game because it was a kid's game. My son used to play it, and they had a beginning, middle, and end. And you got to scroll through and pick your beginning, middle, so you could make it, you know, the assassin dragon or what, right?
Right.
So in this, clearly they have some more advanced formula, but I've seen some ones that I don't even understand what it means, if it even means anything, right? Yeah. The ones I picked here, most of them seem like they kind of have an adjective and not, right, like they make some sense, but
yeah, I think the favorite one I got was Shipbreaker That Cools Matrimony, which is just a strange, you know.
I have Slowly Bronze Neil.
Yeah.
That's mine. So, yeah.
And clearly there's been the controversy, like you've said, of some inappropriate names. And again, clearly not intended, right?
Right.
Unintended consequence of random name generation, where words just have been put in a certain order with a certain noun or a certain adjective that would lead people, whether politically or racially or whatever, to say, oh, that's bad because, you know, something happened, you know, in the news and whatever. But unfortunate, but again, unintended.
So that's the big part for me. And even talking to Kathy, who can get a little more agitated or irate about those kind of things, like she felt like you got to give people a pass here. Like, so I don't know, and I'm not here to defend Fantasy Flight, but like one of the words that came up was racism. And so one of the famous decks, unfortunately, but is the Farmer of Racism, which is not a good title, right?
No.
Now, Destroyer of Racism would be perfectly fine, right?
But at least that one, though, isn't it's not targeting a race, right? It's not targeting a religious group. It's just mentioning the word racism, which isn't as bad maybe as some other ones out there. But here's my question. I get that it was random and you can have that happen. However, I know they're not like, it's not like an assembly line where they're looking at, they don't have a person picking up every decade.
They're all sealed.
But if it's all computer generated, you would think there's a program that they could pick 25 keywords and say, if these words showed up, pull these decks and let's verify, or write some kind of.
And there is, but what they didn't catch, from what I understand from other people who said they've been involved in this in other industries and other things, was that the word race was left in and the ending ism was left in without realizing the word racism could be made of those two, for example, right? So you might want ism for something else and you want the word race, right? Like run a race. And then when the two got put together by the generator, that didn't
And I'm, as so we well. Know, I'm not technologically sound. However, I would think there's coding that would say have race, has ism, but never have them together.
Right.
You would think.
Yeah. Well, now there is.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And then, of course, there's other stuff that's just you take a completely innocent word, another completely innocent word, and then a completely innocent verb or something, and just the way they're put together will also seem inappropriate or be inappropriate. And that's much harder to catch, I think, than a keyword.
So they did offer, we should say this, Fantasy Flight offered that you can send your deck in if it's inappropriately named and get two. Now, for me, I feel like if I have an inappropriate named deck, I'm okay with playing with it. But they are trying to make this family friendly. And so if you have a deck that suddenly your son or daughter has and you don't want them to have that, I could see that being a benefit. Now, if it was me, I would probably just switch decks. Like, hey, why don't you play this deck instead, right?
Now, this may or may not be a good segue. However, decks are already going for dollars and cents, right? Like, so whether it's there's X amount of rares in a deck, I checked eBay before we did this, and there's decks for over $100, a lot of decks in the $40 range based on number of rares. I used to be a baseball card collector years ago, and when you had to misprint, and I remember the Billy Ripken misprint very clearly where something was written on his bat inappropriately, that always generates value. So I have a feeling that the Fantasy Flight's not going to get many $10 deck returns for two more random decks, and instead these decks that are inappropriate might hit trade markets, eBay, whatever is my guess.
Yeah.
Curious to see that. And I mean, if the deck's not good, I don't want it. I can care less about the name, right? I want a good deck. So I could see paying for a good deck, not necessarily a inappropriately named deck. But who knows?
Let's segue there, though. Let's segue to market price of decks.
Nah,
it seems like a good spot to look at. Like, this has got to be, if you're into that and selling, this has got to be prime time, right? Before anybody knows anything about decks. What was the one you said?
Oh, there was a deck that's the Four Horsemen Killer. So it doesn't have the Four Horsemen in it. It's just the deck claims it beats the Four Horsemen, but it's unopened.
Right.
How do you know that? It must have a couple of cards that they think are good against the Four Horsemen. And they're selling it for over $100.
Brian, you have the Four Horsemen?
Yeah, I've got a deck with the Four Horsemen in it.
What exactly are those?
I mean, they're just like some, what is it, Sanctum cards that kind of work together. Like it's
the knights, the creatures?
Yeah. I forget exactly what they are. They kind of go a little off from the normal Sanctum play style. But, you know, there's like Horsemen of Death, Horsemen of Pestilence. I forget exactly what
they're Famine, War, Death, Pestilence.
Or whatever they are, yeah. So there are the four ones there. And then it just, I think more of it's kind of based on synergy of the other cards with it. I was reading a lot about it, and it seems like it's kind of more just those cards work together already, and just finding a deck that has consistency like that is key. So,
and I remember looking at your deck, if I remember correctly, one of the Horsemen was a rare.
Yeah,
and then the other three were special rares.
They're tied to that.
They're tied to that rare. So, interesting. So again, value. You know, a lot of people I think right now are placing value on number of rares, which is interesting because number of rares does not make a good deck or bad deck. It could make a good deck, right? In Magic, you have rares that are only worth a quarter or 17 cents because they're not value. People don't want them because they're not good cards. And I've seen plenty of rares in Keyforge that aren't great, but I've seen some that are very good. And so there's other things to consider. Like my point, Brant and I were talking, how much amber does your deck produce just off playing cards? Like, is that a value indicator? Like, this deck produces 27 amber. You know, is that going to be a value indicator? And I think, you know, a basic deck costs $10. I think reasonably $25 to $40 is going to be a reasonable price range for a better than average deck. Maybe like, you know, to your point, it's new. Someone's going to label the best Keyforge deck ever, $200, and someone might buy it. Right. I don't know, but it's hard at this point to put a true value, because what's having a good deck really mean? Like, are there, you know, eventually is there going to be, you know, national tournaments and things like that that people want to go and try to win and have a good deck for? If that's the case, the deck values will go up, you know, exponentially, because you're going to take that deck and go try to win a tournament that has some value, yes, you know, with it.
So the other thing I heard was Team Covenant. They cover a whole bunch of, like, LCGs and stuff. We met them at the first Gen Con we went to. And so they were talking about it. They made the acrylic tokens. I think I linked those to you. They sold out in 2 hours on Thursday. And I don't know. I'm going to guess they made 1,000 of them. Now, what they did is they actually uniquely generated each Amber token. So you get a set that has a design on it that's uniquely generated. And then they put a number on it, so they knew what those numbers were. But they played into that same system.
Right.
So they're like, they're jumping up and down, right? Because now here's this extra market piece of tokens and other things they can make. But I also heard them mentioning, actually, I think it might have been Kravik. I've listened to a whole bunch of people. But he was talking about how, like, buying the best deck, the chains will naturally, like, there's a mechanism of change where it says you draw less cards for X number of turns. The chains on the decks are supposed to naturally balance them. So buying a $200 deck, even if it is the best deck, it only works if you play it once against somebody and it's unregistered. Once you put chains on it, it has 10 chains or 30 chains because it's the best deck. Now it's equivalent to the worst deck ever is supposed to be the idea, whether we'll ever actually get there.
Right, and whether our tournament's going to enforce chains, they are, so that'll be interesting.
So what would happen is if you played at the portal and you won 3 weekends in a row and then you took it to another store and played, it would be registered in this area as X number of chains on it.
Interesting.
Even at a different store, so it wouldn't just be specific. However, if you took it to Nationals, it's unchained at that point.
Right. So, and that's where I think the value of a deck may... But let me say this, and again, I'm not trying to always segue here, but... the game had a gimmick that we heard at Gen Con, and I was excited about the gimmick, right? I think we all had some excitement around the gimmick. The game plays great. Like, I think it's a great card game. Like, and I've played card games from before half the people that are listening to this podcast were born, way back in, like, my high school days, 30 years. Like,
thanks,
I played,
Grandpa.
Yeah, right.
You
I'm feeling old.
You know the demographics.
Right. But I played a lot of games. This is up there. This game isn't just a gimmick. It's not just another take on tapping cards and I attack you, right? It's completely different. We're talking, there's no resources in terms of playing cards. So you have 36 cards in every deck. You have 3 factions in every deck, 12 of each faction in your deck. On your turn, you pick a faction, and you get to play and or activate on your board that faction only. Now, there are some cards that are Omni that'll give you an ability to, you know, activate a friendly, you know, creature this turn that's not the, you know, the one you've announced. But that alone, even though there's no resource management, is a whole world of possibilities of, and Brant and I were talking about this, I have this really good card that's not situationally ready. Do I hold it in my hand, which means I'm drawing less cards every turn, or when I announce that faction, do I discard it because I hopefully will go through my deck and get it back? Like, so there's a lot of good decisions other than just, I played a mana this turn, did I play red or white, right? This is more, I have 3 of this card, 2 of this card, 1 of this card in my hand. I have 3 of this on the board, 2 of that on the board. Which one do I activate, right? Like, there's a lot of good decisions there. And the gameplay, so I'm going to explain it because I don't think we have.
Yep.
You have to forge 3 keys to win the game. Exactly. And to forge a key, you need 6 amber at the start of your turn. Some cards, which I think will be the better cards in some decks, allow you to forge a key at a higher cost after the start of your turn. So maybe for +1 or +2 or whatever. So, but the idea is spend 6 amber, forge a key. 3rd key is forged, win the game. So, and a lot of games I've watched, now cards can capture amber so that I hold it away from you. You can get it back eventually. I could steal amber. I could just make amber go away with some cards, just discard amber over a certain amount. So it really becomes a very, I think, solid game of decision making on what to play, when to play it, you know, when to take a gamble. And it's not necessarily always attack my opponent's creatures because, you know, that doesn't necessarily win me the game. Sometimes it does. Board control can matter, cannot matter, depending on the deck. I think it's solid. I don't know your guys' thoughts, but I think the game itself is well done.
Yeah, I thought it was much better than I initially thought it would be. I thought the gimmick would be, I thought it was more intriguing than, you know, necessarily exciting for for a game. But actually playing it and trying it out, there are a lot more decision points that seem like they have like a valuable thing in there, you know. And it's definitely, you know, trying to play up to the strength that you have with your deck. And that's trying to figure out how to do that, especially compared to like what your opponent's playing and kind of how the different factions have that like rock, paper, scissors sort of effect where, you know, they're just going to be playing differently based on what play style your opponent has as well. I think that's fun to test out. So I don't know. It's definitely open right now. We're trying to figure out what best to do for like, you know, for tournaments and just events going forward. But there's a lot of legs right now, and I think we need to keep that going. So,
yeah, I totally love the game. I think it's great. I know I'm an Omni gamer, and I'm listening to Brian at the beginning describing Peekaboo Doo Doo and Picademony, like all these games that are kids' games, and I'm like, that used to be me when we started the podcast. I was the one, even sometimes borrowing some of those from you, mm-hmm. and playing those with Zephra, and it's gone. We just don't play that stuff anymore. Right.
You sound like you're starting to name Keyforge decks.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But I love these two-player battle games, and so I play a bunch with Kathy, but really in the store it's just been hard. Even something like a Destiny or a Dice Masters, you just get behind the curve so fast. If you don't have that next set of cards completely or that deck, you just don't have much to show up with. Like, who wants to play the starters? And it's like, I don't want to play the starters because I have a whole deck built. Why don't you take mine? But Keyforge removes all that. It's just like, I know the game. Great, let's play. I can play on a Thursday night. I can play on a Tuesday night. I can play a year from now with the deck I have, and it will most likely be the same. I don't have to do any deck building, which I love deck building, but the fact that I can remove that to play casually in other places, I think is phenomenal.
And you can interestingly show up with four or six friends, and each of you buy a deck that night at $10 and go,
right.
Boom, let's play. Winner gets free dinner, whatever. Like,
this is what Brian friends. Is hoping, yes.
Right, but I mean, it's a nice way of, yes, I can come with my, you know, Brant did the math. There are 35 unique deck faction combinations. I think I have 26 of those 35, so I need to find the other 9. But my point is, like, you play your decks, you might want to just say, I want to play something blindly that I haven't practiced with and played with my friend. You know, come to the store, buy a couple decks, you guys sit down, you can do your own little, like, the store doesn't, I guess my point is, have to sanction a tournament or run a event where you could, I mean, the game lends itself to
you just
buy some decks, crack them open right then and there, play. I think you had the idea, winner take the deck. Okay, I mean, it's not a bad investment. I mean, I might lose $10 on the deal, but sure, I buy a deck, you buy a deck, we play best of three, and the winner takes the loser's deck. Maybe.
Or you switch decks.
Or switch, right, something. I mean, who knows, right? But there's just a lot of opportunity. I'm curious what prize support will look like down the road from Fantasy Flight, because Brant and I were talking earlier. Can't really do alternate art, because they're unique decks where the deck art matters for so
but you know, they left a lot to be desired with the tokens and like nothing coming in.
Can you get a unique foil deck? Did they
a
print
rule
some
book?
Hey, I have a great prize for you. You get a rule book.
foil
rule book, right? But to your point, I think the tokens are a huge part of it. Play mats. You know, pins, but eventually people love cards, right? So will they do a foil deck? Will they do alternate art somehow where you could take a card that a standard common card and make it foil that can be inserted anywhere that card exists? That would be a tough rule to enforce.
So let's pause on the where they're going. That's going to be our last piece. Let's move to we kind of did our review. So let's just move to our initial release. So Brian, tell us about the actual release. What was that, Thursday?
Yep, and snowed. that's
right.
So we started off the day and
snow.
You know, just put out the product. We got like 15 starters and maybe like 15 booster bundles or whatnot, and we sold through the starters within like 2 hours, I believe. So it was really quick. I know as soon as those came in from our pre-orders, like they were sold out through distribution
and allocated.
So, Right, yeah. So I think we were limited from the get-go on that. And there was a lot more demand than initially I thought the decks would be the thing to really stock up on, right? I think just with what comes in there, it leaves a little to be desired just mm-hmm. as far as, like, all the components and whatnot. So, again, like, I think people kind of figured that out as well, and that's why the starters were pretty quick to go. Along with that, we did receive in, like, some upgraded components, like some promo key sets that are, like, full metal keys. So we gave those out to people when they picked up a starter set as well. So, I mean, there was a little bit of, you know, hey, try this out and get this freebie as well. So I guess that kind of lended to to selling through those pretty quickly. But, yeah, we would have loved to have had a little bit more going on as far as, like, games and stuff like that. But that night was pretty brutal as far as the weather goes. Yeah. So we closed early and really didn't have... You know, I don't know if anyone even came in to really play. I know Mason came in, tried to get a game going, but at that point people were leaving and trying to get home before the roads got even worse than they were. So, but yeah, that was kind of the basic gist. That was that Thursday for the release. And, you know, we're looking to do something a little consistently going forward. I know after that it went right into, you know, Thanksgiving and, you know, PAX Unplugged for you guys, but... Hopefully we can kind of build up some of that momentum from the pre-release and make something consistent going forward.
I think what's important there, though, to note is, like, yeah, the starters sold out and they were allocated and they're gone from Fantasy mm-hmm. Flight. I think a starter's an okay buy, but, like, you can totally get by without the starter.
Oh, yeah.
Use dice, use tokens, buy decks. Like, you're fine, you know? I would imagine any gamer that's going to be considering this and listening to this podcast, picking it up, will have some kind of tokens or dice they could use as a proxy and be perfectly fine. We played with dice with the opening decks forever.
Yeah.
And tokens from Orleans and whatever we could find, right? So I think that's fine. And but we still have plenty of the decks on our end.
We ordered more because we did sell through, like, 2/3 within, like, that first weekend of the decks. So we restocked before those went out of stock again. So we've got a bunch of, you know, just the initial decks, the $10 decks. So, yeah, definitely come down. And if you're interested, you know, even let us know if there's something you're wanting to, like, participate in or play. You know, we want to hear feedback from the, you know, customers too.
Sure, yeah.
Because that's something where, you know, a new event needs a little bit to, like, build up. But as long as people are, like, coming down and looking for Keyforge events, like, as long as they can kind of find it on a specific consistent day or night or whatnot, like, that'll be the big thing for it going forward.
Nice. Cool. All right, so then we can talk about the future of the game. Where is it going? What's happening? I know that for me the scariest thing is FFG is saying they are sold out. And distributors are saying that there might be some more available.
Alliance is out right now. They were hoping for a restock in a couple weeks, but I don't know what that means. You know, if they're going to sell right out again, or yeah, I'm sure there's so much more demand right now than than they can supply.
And it's huge because it's not just, like, people that play Magic. It's not just board gamers who kind of know about Fantasy Flight. It seems to be, you know, across the board. I'm finding it. You know, it's really intriguing to a lot of people in terms of that. So I'm just intrigued as to what will happen. I think of a Destiny and a Dice Masters, which are still games that get played, but they just haven't, like, overtaken your shop, right? And Keyforge has that potential to overtake a shop, to have 20 people playing on a given night, you know, 10 people playing on a given night, whatever it is. Sealed tournaments, open play.
The interesting thing, the thing that sometimes hurt these other games is how the expansions roll out and how that affects the first wave that mm-hmm. is no longer available or what have you. What does Keyforge do next?
Yeah.
Right? Is an expansion
370 more cards?
Is it the same factions? Is it new factions? Do they eventually add a side deck in where that's a whole different? I mean, who knows what they have in mind and what Garfield's thinking, but they've really left themselves open with a lot of possibilities. But whatever it is, it's not traditional. It's not what we're used to. It's not, oh, here's a new expansion to mix in with your old stuff
right.
to create new decks. It's a unique deck every time. So yeah. What are the new decks? Is it new factions? Is it
Does it stand alone? You can only play KeyForge unplugged, whatever. I don't know.
Brant's random name generator is not working right now.
KeyForge 2, Revenge of KeyForge. Like, can you only play it against the decks of that as well, right?
And so then like is that like old school Magic where you're going to a tournament that's a standard tournament versus this block tournament versus a whatever?
Yeah.
Right? Like, is it a KeyForge having different tournaments based on deck releases, or will it be wide open, you know, the game is balanced with chains and the game is, you know, uniquely designed and play whatever.
And can you picture, like, so they make an expansion with a pool of 120 cards or something, I don't know, whatever, maybe 140, 20 cards for each faction, and they say, this is going to be, we're still going to randomly generate, but you're going to get these new cards with the old set. And then you go and you buy a deck for $10 from the new set and it has one card from the new set. And the other 35 are all generated from the original set. Would you feel like, wait a second, like you still have a unique deck, but would you feel like you didn't have the experience?
And to some point, the future of the game in some regards will be dependent on Fantasy Flight as well, because a game is only as good as its support. And how will they support it? How will they help stores support it? Will they run big tournaments like Magic, where people want to do well because, hey, I want to go to this tournament and win $10,000. Or I want to go to this tournament and win a trophy. And who knows, right? But, and here's a question I'm just going to throw out there. 5 years from now, is there KeyForge 2.0 where it's all the same cards now in a build-your-own deck, right? Like, there's nothing says they can't take this game and eventually
make it a building deck
in a different environment. Who knows, right? I mean, it's going to really be up to them what they want to do with it. But right now, the game is solid. It's good. Let's keep producing it so people can get it and, you know, enjoy it.
Yep. There's a PAX Unplugged tournament. So really? They already have it going. Oh,
oh boy.
Yeah, so they already have it, you know, at the first available.
Do you think they'll have those 9 extra types of decks that Larry needs?
That's right, yeah, all for sale. So where do you see that going, Brian, in terms of the store becoming part of that sales market? Do you think it's just retail?
I don't know. There's some value to it. Like, I think most of the stuff that I was looking at, you know, people would open whatever, and most of the stuff was marked up a little bit, right? Like a couple bucks here or there for, you know, a basic one. Because, you know, people don't know right now. Like, it's not like they have an idea of this card is good. Like, I'm sure someone has it. I thought on that, but there isn't like one card that I know of that's going to boost the value, besides maybe the Four Horsemen, where that's kind of inflating that deck. Besides that, I don't think there's like the chase card that every deck with that is going to be like $100, right? And maybe it'll get to that just based on how things play out, but I don't know. I think I like having them sealed. I feel like that's more in the nature of the game, like the spirit of the game, to try to get something that is unique to you and you don't necessarily know. You know, I don't dislike that the other ones are out there, but
right. I'm curious, like when you look at the store, like with Magic singles, like can you put 10 decks in there, ranging in price from I'll say $5 to $25, based on from what I've seen. I've seen 2 rares in a deck, and I've seen 6 rares, right? And I've seen the gambit in between, mm-hmm. and then there's special rares. So, you know, do you add value for that? And for people like me, and I'm not the only one in the world, and there are others.
Right.
Someone might be looking for, I really like Brobnar, and I'd like to see it with Dis and with Sanctum. Mm-hmm. Someone wants that.
Have that deck for sale.
Right. But my point is someone going to buy, and there are, I'll do it, I'll buy 5 sealeds and not get that combo. At some point, someone might want to walk into a store and go, hey, do you have Brobnar with Dis with Sanctum? Oh, cool, let me look at the deck list. It's got 4 rares. Sure, I'll pay $20 for it, $25. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but I know I would buy a reasonably priced deck that I was looking for the faction combination or the Four Horsemen. I'm interested in checking them out, right? I don't know how many other people would be. But I will tell you, because I see it time and time again, people spend a lot of money on single Magic cards. And every once in a while, I get nervous when I look up a Magic card price and I tell the guy, oh, man, this is $52. Okay, yeah. Right? So there are people that are willing to spend over $52 on a single card in a 60-card deck, right? And there are Magic decks that go for thousands of dollars when you add up the value of all those single cards. So.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't a KeyForge deck be worth $100 or $200 if it was at that level? I mean, I think if the game picks up popularity, that secondary market, I would think, would pick up.
Yeah, I'm just trying to picture a deck that would be... I don't know. I wonder what would happen, because I don't feel like if we opened up a box, I feel like there would just be inflated value right from the get-go, because, you know, that people have more information as far as what they're buying. Now, if it gets to the point where, you know, if that combo that you, like Brobnar with Sanctum and Dis or whatever, if that's, like, universally the, like, the worst one of that a bunch, then, you know, I could see that being, like, oh, you know, this, we won't sell this even for, like, $5 or something. But I don't think right now if we cracked one, I feel like there would only be potential profit to be made on opening one up and having stuff for sale.
Now, well, I agree. I don't think from a store perspective, I don't know, like Magic, I don't think, like in Magic, some stores will open packs and packs and packs, like, and put out singles. And,
yeah.
I don't think you open a deck as a store and then put it for sale. I think if anything, someone comes in and says, hey, I happen to have two decks with this combination. Can I trade, you know, can I trade this deck in? And you might offer them $5 back for a $10 deck they bought. And then you could, now you could sell that deck anywhere from, I guess, $6 to $30, and you know, you're at a profit point. Whereas I think for the store, it's harder to open them blindly and then sell them opened, unlike packs where you're getting, you know, your rare cards and stuff. I don't know. I'm curious.
So how about there's the middle ground? You open the cardboard, but not the plastic.
Right. That's what I think a lot of people.
Well, I think that's what most. I think most decks are going to sell cardboard open, plastic sealed. I think. When I looked on eBay, only one deck seemed to have...
But how do they know they have horsemen? Can you see the deck list?
Yes. The deck list
card is on the front.
Right. And then on eBay...
That's a shame. Right. If you could see the three, then I think you'd have a different market.
Right.
Yeah. I thought they had the card backwards. They don't?
No, they have the...
It's in the front.
It's like the logo is on the back, and then the first card that you see the face of is the card list.
Yeah.
Which that's why everyone can
good
do
and
it.
Bad. Okay, gotcha.
That's why it's like... That's where... You know, we could post it and just have them so people buy, like, these combos of houses, right? And, you know, we might be making more, but it, I don't know.
Because I thought that Archon card was just, you could see the back of it. Yeah, that'd be interesting, because then you know it's these three factions, and you only know one card that's in there.
Yeah.
Then it would be
no, it's interesting.
Risky.
It's an interesting, and I think for something like this, the player base, to some extent, the community is going to dictate what the store needs to do or what, you know, the,
if people are asking for it, then there's a play on just doing individual decks or whatnot. So
we'll experiment. I'll put a few decks in the case for you, Brian. I have enough,
like,
extras.
Mike's decks that are lying around.
Yeah, we could do that to Mike, but no, I have enough.
I
have like 10-12 extra decks, so we could see if anyone bites on it, if they're interested, you know, who knows, to test the waters.
You haven't, like, uploaded them? And
no, I didn't even know you could do that. Brand just told me that. I've been so busy. Like, all I did was open 30-something decks, sleeve them, because you have to sleeve them when you open them, and then, you know.
Yeah, so there's a KeyForge app. So you can go into the app, and you can register your deck with a QR code. So you add your deck. It scans very easily. And then you have all of your decks, and you get a profile. You can go in. You can filter your decks, and then you can actually see your deck. It gives you power, chains, wins, losses, and total, which is obviously going to be something that's going to come about during tournaments. And then it actually tells you all the cards that are in your deck, and you can actually see the card. So if you can't remember the card or your deck, you can dig it out, which is nice for reference.
For everyone at home, is there a name for this in the App Store, or is it just look up KeyForge?
KeyForge. Yeah, it's the I don't remember. Master Vault. And then you get a profile, and every one you register, you get an amber shard. Every three shards is an amber, and every six amber is a key. And every key, dun-dun-dun, nobody knows what a key does. And the speculation is that you won't just get this from decks, but you'll get this from tournaments. So when you register at the tournament, you'll get a place, and you'll earn so many amber shards, and then... We'll see where people are.
And there's one more thing. I'm sorry. I know you're trying to stop, but you're getting me excited. The one thing I forgot to mention on where this game is going, and I don't have them because I don't have a starter, but the keys have colors, currently meaningless. I'm wondering if that's somewhere they're going, that the color of the key, that you forge matters for future card play or for future rules or whatever. But I thought that was interesting because they did not have to have them be different colors. I think it was red, blue, and green or yellow. I thought that was interesting. So maybe something to happen with that.
Actually, I just noticed that you can search every deck that's been registered. So there's 114,000 registered decks. So if I hear about such and such a deck and I can remember the name of it, which is brutal, but yeah. If I can, then I can find it in here if it's been registered and I can, this is what's in this deck. So I can.
Now I'm curious if they will allow the inappropriate names to be registered.
No, they're flagged.
Okay, they are flagged. Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so that's how you'll know. If it won't let you register your deck, then it's flagged. So now I guess that would be taken out of tournaments. The inappropriate decks cannot be
registered, right.
Which then you'll start to hear the rally cry of like, I don't feel like this is that inappropriate, and the deck's really good. And they're going to say, nope, we consider that inappropriate, right? A subjective, this is inappropriate, so you can't play with it. So now, will you return it, you know? That's that. Final thoughts on Keyforge, boys?
Yeah, I thought it was a successful release, and, you know, I'm definitely excited to see what the future holds with it.
Yeah, great game, great gimmick. Put the two of them together. I think it's got some legs. And if you haven't tried it and you're in the area, we have demo decks. Come try it out.
Full demo decks.
Like they're just regular decks. They're not the starter decks. And, you know, there's plenty of people here that can show it.
Nice. Yeah, me too. I'm really excited to see where this game goes. I am totally excited to stocking stuff for this. Like, look, Kathy, you got two new decks in your stocking. Guess I'll have to play on Christmas morning. Like, I think that's super exciting. I'm going to try to knock out a bunch of games here. You know, it's a great game when I have game nights or if I'm around at the store and you only have two. Like, let's play this. Little long for somebody's first play. Runs about 45 minutes if they really read through the cards. But what I generally say to people is, whatever you have three of in your hand, pick that house. Just learn the game. Just get things going. You know what I mean? If you really want to be detailed, count the number of creatures of that house plus what's in your hand and go with the greater. But is there a time where you're going to take the one where you have none? Sure. But, you know, for the most part, that's the way to play it the first time. So, cool. That sounds good. I think that's it for the real episode number 108. And, we'll see where things go from here. I'll probably do a solo episode 109. 110 should be a PAX Unplugged episode. And then we go from there in terms of all that. I got to get Brian on an episode to talk about games he's played recently because there's a lot, I think, on the list. And same with Kathy. Brian's like, no, but I think there is. And I got to get Kathy on because we have a whole bunch of stuff we've played that I really want to talk about, including Detective, Brass, Birmingham, Heroes of Tyranoth. These are all ones that Kathy's played.
And
that
the
I think
one
really
I can't
good.
Pronounce but is awesome, Teo...
Teotihuacan.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we played, Brian. You haven't talked about it yet. So people want to know your thoughts. They are desperate for this. So cool. That wraps up number 108. I am your host, The Brent.
Your co-host, Brian.
Guest host, Larry.
And until next time, we hope you step into the portal. Portal Game Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on November 21st, 2018. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Game Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, you can visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Hey, thanks for listening, and happy Thanksgiving.